Radio.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 14th of April 2017 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. I'm very pleased to welcome back today the Wanderer, the Wandering Minstrel, Mr. Dennis Wise, the storyteller behind Adolf Hitler, the Greatest Story Never Told, who disappeared about 3 weeks back, I think it was. I think he was out of action because his computer went kaput on him, but we're very pleased that he's back today. Dennis, how are you today? And please let us know what's been happening over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's nice to be back, Sven. We had problems with the computer. Coincidence or not is yet to be seen. I just started on the new documentary. Software corruption began, and then eventually the computer, which is only 12 months old, if not even that, finally went on the blink. So it was a problem. And then when I managed to get myself back on my feet again with the computer, the internet went down. So it's been fun and games since then. We're now back to square one, and we'll see what happens from now on in.
Did you lose much of your work at all when it happened?
No, I didn't lose any work. It was all backed up. But the fact was that once I'd started the documentary with the ideas of going online for information, I had to put that on the back burner. And so therefore, I started work on what I would probably have done further down the line. So it's all a bit of a mishmash at the moment. But at least I didn't waste time on not doing anything.
Well, at least it started right at the beginning of your research for the new documentary as well. Imagine if that had happened and you'd been halfway through or near the end of it and you had all your work on that computer and it suddenly became corrupted. And you've got to be thankful for small mercies, I think.
Well, thankfully, on Mac PCs, you do have a backup on it. And that's if you have the knowledge to use it or awareness to use it, which I did. obviously it did all back up on another hard drive, which I could link up to this computer. So everything which was on my other computer is now available to be seen or withdrawn from that hard drive onto this one, which is a great feature of the Mac.
Well, thankfully, Mrs. Messerschmitt was able to step in last week, so we were able to produce something for people, but it wasn't the same without having you here. Certainly wasn't the same, and the conversation wasn't the same. The conversation matter, and I do other podcasts with other co-hosts at Radio Aryan, and this one really is different to them. It's just not the same without you there, Dennis. The subject matter.
Nice to hear. I mean, Messerschmitt's a good friend of mine. He has his specialities in certain areas. Certainly, the knowledge that I've accumulated over the last two documentaries has served me well. And also the knowledge I'm pretty sure I'm going to find in this one as well will do exactly the same.
Well, we've got some historical matter that we're going to be talking about tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about the miracle at Dunkirk, and maybe we'll talk about some of the things you got up to when you found yourself actually cut off from the internet. But first, I think I'd like to just bring something to people's attention. I got sent an email earlier in the week from Jez Turner, and it concerns Horst Mahler. Horst Mahler is a revisionist. He was a lawyer. He's a German lawyer. I believe he started out leftist, of the leftist persuasion, and then he realized the error of his ways, and he looked into what happened in the Second World War, realized that he'd been lied to about Germany, and he spoke up about this. He was quite vocal about this and about his researches and questioning what he had been told, and the German authorities jailed him. They jailed him for a total prison term of 12 years. Now, the man is 81 years old. He suffers from diverse chronic diseases. He's insulin-dependent diabetes mellitus, permanent atrial fibrillation, stage 3 kidney disease, cardiac degeneration. He's had a previous heart attack. He's got a vestibular disorder and vertigo, and he now has an amputated leg. They let him out of prison so that he could have his leg amputated, and he was hoping that that would be it. He had he'd already served two-thirds of his sentence, but they've said no. They've just told him that he's got to go back inside. Now, this is pretty much a death sentence. The guy's come out of prison to have his leg amputated, and the reason why his leg needed to be amputated was because of the lack of medical facilities inside the prison. And he's now being told that he's got to go back in there. On the 5th of April, he received a summons that he's got to continue his term. He's never been accused of any violent crime. He's never stolen any money. He's never broken any of the laws, basically. The laws that we know and believe in. The laws you can't hurt somebody, you can't steal from them, you can't defraud them. He's done none of that. All he has done is try to get at the truth of what actually happened 70 years ago in Germany. And for that, he's pretty much been given a death sentence, because that's what this is. And what we'd like to do is just draw attention to this. I'll put some links into the article so people can find out more about this. Just tell people about it. Tell people about what's going on in Germany. Tell people that an 81-year-old man is with only one leg is being sent back to prison, where the only possible thing that can happen to him is that he's going to die in prison. And this will be the first extrajudicial, well, it's a judicial execution. It's not that they're actually giving him a death sentence and putting him in on the electric chair or in the gas chamber, but they know that if they send him back to prison, there's a very, very high chance that it's going to be fatal. And the guy is 81 years old. He served his country as a lawyer, and the reason why he spoke the truth is because he loves his country and he loves his people and he wants to do right by them. And yet, because of these horrific Holocaust denial laws in countries that are supposed to have free speech, and you listen to Frau Merkel, you listen to Theresa May, you listen to Hollande, you listen to all these European politicians, and they'll talk about how proud they are that Europe has free speech, and it's just an absolute crock of shite. It's a complete lie. We don't have free speech, and people that do speak up about the truth are in prison. We have political prisoners of all ages, and to think that they're actually sending this guy back to prison with one leg at 81, it just makes me furious, Dennis. Absolutely furious to hear this. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, this is, interestingly enough, I was in a YouTube comment debate with a guy from Germany, who felt that I was sticking my nose into their war, and I was talking rubbish about Germany not having free speech. And I simply said to him at one point, Germany is a muzzled country, you don't realise it, but if you want proof, then you just look around and look at the monuments to the Bolshevik soldiers that raped 2 million German women, are still up there in Germany. You look at the Luxembourg Plaza, which is a monument to the attempted communist takeover after World War One, and these are signs of that country that you're living in is still under this communist regime. Just as watching the news, because I didn't have the computer at hand, I watched a little bit more news on the TV, and even this week in Britain, somebody took a case to the High Court. They wanted to bring the child out on a holiday with them, which didn't sit with the times that the schools had been given. And the ruling was that the state dictates whether the child goes on a holiday or not. And if you don't abide to that ruling, then the parents will be fined. And it's a classic case of communism where state owns your child. And there's no difference in other parts of Europe, but obviously in Germany, we do get the worst of it.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. I was really hoping that the guy was going to win his court case. I mean, your children are your children. So long as they are being educated, they aren't being neglected, then you should be able to take them out from school and take them abroad. They're going to learn more when they're abroad than anywhere else. But of course, the state has to step in, and you're right to bring that up, I think, Dennis, because people do think that we're free to bring our children up how we want, we're free to research what we want, we're free to express how we feel, but we're not. As soon as you start looking into what happened in the Second World War, as soon as you find something that contradicts the narrative and what we've been told and what Hollywood tells us, as soon as you speak up about that, it could be the slightest thing. It can just be asking why it's 6 million. Where is the evidence for there being 6 million? That automatically identifies you as a Holocaust denier, as an anti-Semite, as a racist, and as a hater. And they will come after you if you speak up about that. All I can suggest is that they can't lock everyone up. The more people that speak up about this, the harder they're going to find it to keep a lid on it. They're not going to be able to keep people silent because there's going to be so many people that are talking about it. We already see hints of it in the comment sections, especially at the Daily Express and the Daily Mail. You'll often see something in there that somebody who disbelieves what we've been told about the war, but it's absolutely central to everything that goes on today. What happened in that war and what happened afterwards set everything up for how it is today. This political correctness, the cultural Marxism, the suspension of freedom of speech for nationalists, and the promotion of this one world agenda, the new world order. It all came about because Germany lost that war. And one of the most important points, I think, in that war was what happened at Dunkirk, which is what we were going to have a look at tonight. I received an email a while back, actually, asking if we would do something on Dunkirk and maybe have a bit of a debate about it, because there are differing views on it. People think that this is evidence for Hitler being a double agent, because what he did, he let all the British troops leave from France. He had them all cornered. They were all there at Dunkirk. They'd lost the battle. They had no way to get back. And instead of bombing them, instead of trying to take them all prisoner and lock them all up, Hitler graciously allowed them to leave. And people say that because he did that he must be a double agent, because of course then he lost the war. So rather than me explaining what I think was going on in his mind, I'll hand this over to you, Dennis, and maybe you can explain your views on this and why Hitler was not a double agent for letting the British people come back to Britain.
Well, I briefly covered this in The Greatest Story Never Told, and I left the option open for people because there were so many myths surrounding this particular incident. And I left it saying that some people believed it was a blunder. Other people believed it was an act of a handout for peace. It's a difficult one because obviously whoever wins the war, that's the history books. And even not that long ago, they came up with the assumption now that it was Hitler not handing out the hand of peace, but was in a power struggle with his generals and had called a halt to the advance in this power struggle, which he eventually won, and then the advancement continued. That is another argument now thrown into the hat. For those who are interested in the way that I feel, and with the research that I've done on Hitler, I think you've got to look at the fact that it's never mentioned of the 22 plus peace offers that Hitler had offered throughout World War II. And even after Poland, he stretched out the hand to say, you know, he was quite prepared to hang back land that's been conquered and just retain the land that was robbed from Germany after World War I, something which no other conqueror in history had offered and yet was turned down. And even after returning to Berlin with the defeat of France, he immediately offered yet another peace treaty, hoping that he could settle something with the British. So my own point of view is that it was a hand of peace. It also spoke well of the English race being so similar to the British. He didn't particularly want a war with Britain at any time. And then I read something quite recently that in his closing writings near his death, he actually admitted it was a hand of peace that he was offering. So basically, that's the way I feel or have felt even before I heard that. So nothing really has changed my mind then.
Well, looking at it the way I see it, I think he didn't expect the British troops to continue the war after that. People have said that he, after this happened, the last thing he expected to see was British troops back on the mainland again. He didn't think that the British army would come back into Europe again. And I think it was incredibly dishonourable for Churchill to continue the war after that. They had obviously lost. Britain had lost. Britain was absolutely at Hitler's mercy. Now, at that point, normally in a war or in a battle, you've lost. Either you agree to become a slave and you become a slave of the person that's won that battle, or you end up being put to the sword. You put yourself to the sword, or they will put you to the sword. That's the only two options you've got. It's a life or death moment that the battle has been won. And that's the way that it always was throughout history. That's why you have these slaves that the Romans used to capture. You have all these slaves in the Middle East that they used to capture when they had these wars, and the Greeks as well. If you had a battle with somebody and you won, they either became a slave or they fell on their sword. Now, what happened here, instead of falling on their sword and accepting that Hitler had won and Britain was effectively enslaved to Hitler, only he was so gracious, he didn't make any demands like that. He didn't say, Britain, you have to admit defeat and then we'll allow your people to go back. We'll allow the boats to come and pick you up. He never said that Britain had to admit defeat because it was just so obvious that Britain had been defeated. And rather than kill all the army and all the people that were stranded there on the beach, he relied upon the British people being honourable, realising that they had been beaten fair and square, and rather than any more loss of life, they should have just accepted defeat. Hitler didn't want to have a massacre. He didn't want to wipe out the British army. He wanted Britain to be on friendly terms with Germany. And what better
Correct,
way to do that than to show how honourable he was and how he didn't want war? He just wanted the British to leave Germany alone to carry on with Germany's National Socialist policies. That was all that it was. The only reason for going into Poland was because the Germans were being massacred in Poland in horrific ways, and they had hundreds of thousands of German refugees were fleeing back into Germany from Poland. He'd made all these reasonable requests to Poland to come to some agreement on the Danzig question, and Poland, instead of going to the meeting and instead of coming to a sensible agreement, had been given a blank check by Britain saying that Britain would back up Poland if Germany invaded. So they did all they could to provoke Germany into going into Poland. So he really did have lots of reasons to go after Britain, to really want to give Britain a good thrashing. But he didn't. He was honourable.
No, I
He
didn't.
conceded one.
Well, the thing with if you notice with Paris was it was a different story than it was with Warsaw. Warsaw was given three chances to actually accept the terms of Hitler, which they refused, and Warsaw was flattened. When it came to Paris, the French agreed, and Paris actually just carried on as if nothing really happened. There was no destruction of any buildings or killings of any particular civilians. But we then see the British evacuating back to Britain, where Churchill then gives the speech of, this is a war where Christianity is at stake, which is ridiculous coming from somebody who knows that the old Axis powers were all Christian anyway. So, there's a lot left out what we've been told, and slowly over time, little bits get filled in. Like, for instance, he went to America. Obviously, Roosevelt couldn't get a public opinion behind him at that point. Then we find out that Stalin's about to invade Europe. These are things that are going on behind the scenes, I believe, when America couldn't join Britain to force Germany out of France, then the call for Stalin came. This is my belief, and it's been also been kept out of history books that they were about to invade Europe as well, which adds to that, to be honest. Hitler, yes, he invaded the Soviet Union by 1939, maybe 18, 17 days before they could invade Europe. And he wasn't prepared for such a fight. But as good as that army was, it got to the gates of Moscow, and certain events then turned things around. But certainly, I don't believe we've been told the whole truth by the victors.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Christianity there, because there is a parallel. There's a parallel with this very event. If you look in the Old Testament, you've got King Saul and you've got young David. David before he was a king. And Saul wanted to kill David. And Saul one day, he went into a cave to relieve himself. And David was actually hidden in the cave. And King Saul didn't see that David was there. And instead of killing his enemy, when he could have done, David could have quite easily killed King Saul. He had him at his mercy. King Saul didn't know he was there. David just cut off a small piece of his cloak. And then Saul went off. He went back. And then when he eventually saw David and wanted to kill David, David just showed him this piece of his cloak. He said, I had you at my mercy. And I gave you mercy. And that dissipated all the temper that was in King Saul, and King Saul gave up on his attempt on David's life, because David had had him at his mercy. He could have killed him and he didn't. So that was the honourable thing to do. And the honourable thing for Churchill to do, when all the British troops were at Hitler's mercy, and instead of imprisoning them or just dropping bombs on them from the Messerschmitt, Hitler allowed them to go. He showed mercy. And the honourable Aryan thing to do, if you're in that situation, is to admit defeat. It's to say, no, we're not going to fight because we've already had the fight and we've lost. Rather than fighting again and losing all the men, we've been given a second chance. All the men are being allowed to return home to Britain alive. They've been given a second chance. So what did we do with the second chance? Instead of making peace with Hitler, Churchill continued the war. And my theory for why Churchill did that, more than anything else, Churchill wasn't white. He wasn't British. His mother was part Red Indian. So, of course, he didn't have any loyalty to the British people. The thought of being honourable, being shown mercy, I don't think would have even crossed his mind, because he didn't have that natural part of what it means to be an Aryan in him in the first place. He didn't have any honour in him in the first place. This is, you know, besides the fact that he was loaned all this money by the Jews and they had bailed him out, because if he had have been white and he had have been bailed out by the Jews, I think he would have thought, well, no, I've got to give up this war now. That is the honourable thing to do. We were at his mercy.
Agreed.
He gave us mercy.
The question I can ask really is, if there were Bolsheviks trapped on that beach, would Hitler have annihilated them?
Well, that's a good point, isn't it? I would have thought that he wouldn't if they were white. If they were the Asiatic hordes, then yeah, I'm sure he would have done.
Yeah, I'm
but
sure
if they
he
were
would.
White,
yeah.
I don't know that he would.
Well, yeah, you've got a point there. Well, the fact that Bolshevism is a belief, and if you had a beach full of Bolsheviks with that belief, I think he would have wiped them out.
But maybe that would have that would have changed their belief, because don't forget there were, what was it, 6 million communists in Germany at the time
when
the National Socialists took power.
Sure, yeah, and they vanished, didn't they?
They converted
you know,
then.
They converted, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to say that in your opening talk about the prisoner there who started out as a left-wing thinking that was the way to go. Hitler also started that way as well. And most people do. I mean, even in this country, most people do. And then, you know, but there was an alternative in Germany, which was National Socialism, which then people could see was not the evilism of Marxism.
No, it actually achieved the things that socialism and leftism promises. It actually did provide jobs for everyone. It did provide houses for everyone. It did provide an uplifting in the standards of living for everyone, and not by stealing all the money from the rich to just hand it out to the poor either. So National Socialism achieved all the things that you get promised by the left, and the left never achieves its promises, does it?
No. Well, I think if he took the best bits of that dogma But obviously there's a lot in that dogma which, you know, you can certainly leave out, which he did, and so they, you know, they did benefit from it. Interesting enough, about, when I talk about Christianity as well, there's this belief by some people on the internet that you know, there was, Hitler wasn't a Christian, or the Germans wasn't a Christian, and there's evidence of that only through what can be described as table talks, which is hardly evidence at all, which was badly translated from the French language. That is the only bit of so-called evidence that they rely on. There's numerous other things that Hitler did, which I could really build him into being one of the greatest Christians of all time. But even so, when he took over in Austria, you know, that country there was predominantly Roman Catholic. 95% of Germany was Christian. It was a Christian country. So for Churchill, a Freemason, and somebody who knew, well, he'd been contradictory all through his career. He wrote about the Bolsheviks and how dangerous it was back in the 1920s. So he knew about this attempt to rule the world by communism, wrote about it, and yet still sided with them when it came down to it. So this was a guy, like you said, who had no feelings whatsoever about the actual white race. In fact, played a big part in, I believe, in wiping out the white race in World War II. And everything since then, as you look at London today, being the English being a minority in their own capital, all adheres to that point of view. So Churchill, to me, along with Roosevelt and along with Stalin, were out to destroy the white race. And again, you can look back at the orders given by Illenberg when the Soviet troops were to invade Russia. He actually gave the order to kill the German blood, to rape the German women. So this was an attempt of genocide on the white race.
Well, yeah, Hitler didn't even have any loyalty to the British people. At the time, there wasn't really that much central loyalty to the white race. People were much more nationalistic and patriotic and saw the nations as being separate. Germany was separate to Britain. Britain was separate to France, separate to Russian. And the nation, they saw as the nations as being separate. And they had more loyalty to them rather than loyalty to the white race. But Churchill's loyalty wasn't even to the British people, let alone to the white race. Now, I think Hitler, by showing mercy, that shows you that he's a Christian. That is a Christian trait. Mercy and charity are Christian traits. Christians are commanded to be merciful. And that's what he did. He showed mercy there. He showed by example and table talks. David Irving said that table talks was most likely accurate. And the reason why he said that had nothing to do with the bits that where Hitler is allegedly talking about Christianity. If you look at where Hitler is talking about Christianity, it's in a language that shows him to be a completely different person to all the other ways where he wrote or spoke about Christianity. He uses the language of anti-Christians, the language of an atheist, someone who really hates Christianity. He uses terms that no Christian would use, and terms which Adolf Hitler himself never used anywhere else. I mean, when I first read that, I thought, this isn't Hitler writing. It can't be, unless he's forgotten everything that he learnt, everything that he obviously knew about Christianity and the history of it. He appears to suddenly have forgotten in that.
Yeah.
So it can't have been him. But the only people that would notice that are people that know about Christian history anyway, and that recognize the bits in Mein Kampf where he's actually quoting from the Bible. Because a lot of the time in Mein Kampf, he uses phrases, or he cites parables, or he uses stories, wording, that he doesn't say, this comes from the Bible. But if you're a Christian, you recognize it. You recognize where you've heard that before. And you realize that he must have been very well acquainted with the Bible to be using phrases like that. And
well, his mother was
like that.
Devout. Yeah, I mean, devout Roman Catholic. So, and he carried a picture of his mother all his life. So his closeness to his mother is, there's no doubts about that. And so her influence on him would have been great. There's no doubt about that.
Well, he knew the history of Christianity as well. I think one of the bits in it, it may have been referring to it being an uprising by slaves or a revolt from slaves, or it was like Bolshevism. How could you compare Christianity to communism when communism and Bolshevism were trying to wipe out Christianity, trying to wipe it out entirely? And it wasn't. Which it didn't Churchill come from slaves. Knew. It came from princes and kings.
Yeah. As like I said, Churchill's life was full of talks and writings are full of contradictions. But the bottom line was that, you know, the Europe was defeated. He was pleased about that with the speech that he gave in Switzerland, in Zurich, in 1946, and various other mentions, and the fact that he was controlled by the Rothschilds. So, you know, two and two make four.
Well, you've also got something else to do with Churchill's memoirs. There's nothing whatsoever in his memoirs about any Holocaust or any gas chambers.
I don't think
there is in Roosevelt's either. None of the main players in World War II and the Allies ever said anything about gas chambers or Holocausting of the Jews.
Yeah,
it's all new. It's all new.
And funny enough, Churchill was the only non-royal to live in a palace, would you believe?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I thought it might be a little bit of useless information. Yeah, he actually lived in a palace, the only non-royal.
No, he was also kicked out of office after he won the war. That's how little the British people thought of him. Instead of voting for him after he'd won the war, they voted for someone else. They showed you how little they thought of him.
And it's never been quite discussed how he was actually brought to power, not in any great depth, just the fact that they got rid of one prime minister and brought in another, but he wasn't elected then. So there's a greater power somewhere, obviously with the king being getting rid of as well. There's a greater power somewhere behind all this, and which is never really discussed.
I tell you what I'd like to see. I'd like to see reports at the time, what people were saying after the miracle at Dunkirk, when the people came back to Britain. I'm wondering whether there were people saying, look, this war has got to stop now.
Well, all the documentaries that I've watched, obviously coming from the victor's point of view, they were treated as heroes, which they may well have been. You know what I mean? There's some sympathy for soldiers who've managed to escape, but it was overwhelmingly that has always been pushed, that side of it. Obviously, knowing the fact that they were later to go back again as well. I mean, hindsight's a wonderful thing. You've got to take this as a thing without actually knowing what the future is going to predict. Hitler was in a position, in that state, so that he would make the decision not knowing of what would happen. A lot of people, I think, look at that and make a decision once they've seen what's happened after that. So to me, it was a peace offering. I think if he'd have known what would have happened, he probably would have carried on.
No, he was relying on the British people being honourable. You would think that the soldiers that came back, that they would have thought, I shouldn't be here now. I'm only alive because Hitler showed me mercy. This war has got to stop now. He is not a bad man. We've been lied to about him. Grander gesture could there be than to allow 60,000 British troops to go home again, safe and sound, when he had them at his mercy? I mean, that's the grandest of all grand gestures. And I'm very ashamed of the British people for not honouring that. And it really surprises me there wasn't an uprising against Churchill after that.
Well, I can only put that down to the fact that since 1945, the demonisation of Hitler has always continued. There's never been any crack in that wall. And I'll give you an example. Ken Livingstone, just a few months ago, he mentioned the fact that Hitler had worked with the Zionists to get the Jews out of Germany and just out of Germany, where not he cared little. The fact was that the Jews didn't want that to come out. I covered this in The Greatest Story Never Told. And the fact that it was leaked in 1985 by a Jew whose parents disowned him, he wrote the book, I think it was Edward Black, I think it was called, and his parents disowned him, the Jews were in uproar, when suddenly, you know, we find out that the Jews weren't beaten and kicked out with just the shirts on the back, the Jews rather, were kicked out of Germany with just the shirts on the back, but that they were transferred down to peaceably down to Palestine. Hitler really didn't care where they went. Nobody else in the world, not Britain, not US, not anybody, wanted these Jews. And the only peaceful way was to transfer them as he did. And he transferred everything along with it, like all the goods, and the goods what couldn't be taken, they were sold, and the money transferred to a special bank account. This I covered in the greatest one ever told. It shocked a lot of people, but it was revealed in 1985-86. And so, you know, this is a similar type of thing. As soon as Ken Livingstone mentions this, he's then jumped on from all angles by everybody who have this agenda of demonizing Hitler completely. And even Ken Livingstone, you know, Red Ken, was, you know, verbally attacked.
Well, Kenny's realizing now that what we've said all along is the truth, and that the truth is no longer a defense. I've got to give him credit. Exactly. He has continued to say it. Every time the journalists interview him about that, he brings it up and he says it. And the journalists cringe when he says it. But it is the truth. They had to withdraw their charges of anti-Semitism against him because it was the truth. But instead, they accused him of bringing the Labour Party into disrepute by it and suspended him. Now, he's already been suspended for a year, and they now suspended him for another year, and the Jews still aren't happy. They're still not happy with that. They want to see him completely expelled from the Labour Party, and they've said that the Labour Party is no longer safe for Jews. And all he's done is verify the truth.
I wonder if he's watched the documentary, to be honest. Yeah,
it's incredible.
Well, I can't say for sure.
Well, I would hope that he has, but I doubt it. I mean, he is an anti-racist, anti-fascist. He's against all types of nationalism. But you do have to give him credit. He has spoken the truth about the transfer agreement. And these Jews, they have to admit that this is the truth because it was one of them that brought it to the world's attention. I mean, the same thing happened in Canada with Ernst Zundel, I think, when he spoke about this, and he was using this book by this Jew that was being interviewed at the time, that said about this that Hitler was transferring Jews from Germany to Palestine, and yet we're not supposed to discuss this, even though that is the truth. Apparently, it's anti-Semitic to say it. So that's pretty much saying that anything that puts the Jews in a different light, other than them being wonderful people that we should worship, means that you're an anti-Semite. Even though this is the truth, Ken Livingstone is, you know, the trouble that he's going through, being told that he should be kicked out of the party, being suspended for 2 years, all it is the truth.
Yeah, well, like you say, he's feeling what we've been feeling for many years. It's just amazing to me that even on mainstream news, they're never reported, you know, prisoners of Holocaust denial. I mean, if anybody didn't have a computer or an internet, they'd be totally unaware that people in Germany were still getting jailed for this.
Well, he's very lucky, really, isn't he? When you consider Horst Mahler, 12 years in prison, losing his leg when he's in prison, 81 years old, got to go back and serve another 3 years, and all that's happened to Ken Livingstone is that he's been suspended from the Labour Party. Because it's exactly the same thing. Now, all Horst Mahler has done is point out the documented facts about World War II. And that's pretty much all that Ken Livingstone has done. And he was, Ken Livingstone wasn't saying it to promote Adolf Hitler in any way, shape or form. He said at the end of it, oh, this is before he went mad and gassed 6 million Jews. As if he's got to add that bit at the end to show that he is a philo-Semite. But even that didn't save him. Even attacking Hitler at the end of it, that still didn't save him, and they still went after him. Maybe.
Yeah, because this refusal for Hitler to be human at all is against everything that stands for.
I was just thinking that with this Ken Livingstone issue in the news at the moment, we could link it with Horst Mahler and say, look at what's happening to Horst Mahler for telling the truth.
For the same, yeah. Incredible.
It is good that somebody from the left is feeling what it's like and seeing what it's like for us when we speak the truth. Truth is no defence anymore.
this is the problem. This is a problem which anybody in Germany is up against. And like this person who was speaking to me via the YouTube comment seemed totally oblivious to it all. You know, he felt that denying the Holocaust was, you know, it was just simply insane. But even to question it was simply insane. So this is how muzzled they really are.
Well, they say it's denying the Holocaust, but all it is looking at the facts about it. I know nobody says that the Jews didn't lose their lives in the war. Nobody says that Jews didn't have a bad time of it in the war. But everyone in Europe had a bad time of it in the war. If the Jews starved in the camps, then the Germans outside the camps were even more likely to be starving because they had to provide their own food. The food and the medicines that were going to the camps, at least they knew they were being fed. At least they knew there were doctors there. The Germans that were outside, who was providing their food for them? They didn't have a doctor on call. They didn't have a hospital there right next to them. They would have had to have travelled to the hospital. They were fighting, defending their country. And these Jews that were in the work camps, they were all looked after, weren't they?
The thing is that when you look at the reparations, I mean, one thing really obviously is obvious, only Jews got reparations. That itself, to me, is a signal. But then when you find out later that, you know, once the person dies, it's then passed on to his children because they've had stress and trauma of hearing of this Holocaust. Alarm bells have got to ring again. This is going to be never ending because this excuse of this trauma, etc., can be passed on forever and ever down the line, and Germany will be paying perpetually, you know, forever. So this has got to ring a bell to some people to say that it's a scam. You know, just like, you know, I think it's $5 billion a day that NASA get. You know, it's a scam. People, you know, these people have ways of getting money out of governments that look legitimate, but are obviously a scam.
They've even got virtual reality holohoax survivors now. They got 3D holograms. Yeah, they've got holograms of holohoax survivors so that they can continue to indoctrinate the next generation once they've gone and convince them that they must pay out reparations to their relatives. Even saying that the horror, the psychological horror is passed on genetically through the blood to their descendants, so they must be paid all these reparations. And yet there's not one autopsy report of anyone that was gassed during World War II.
No orders from Hitler.
Did you see it this week with Sean Spicer, the White House press secretary, when he said that Hitler never gassed anyone? In World War II.
I missed that one. Brilliant. Yeah, that's one thing I did miss. I just got a computer back and I was busy trying to update everything.
Yeah, he said Hitler never used any chemical weapons during World War II. This is factual. I can remember reading
it. He was gassed in World War I, weren't he? I
mean, yeah, that's
it. Would not full effect.
That's where I first learned about this. When I wasn't a nationalist, I read a book by Paxman. Jeremy Paxman on chemical weapons, and it was talking about them, the evolution of chemical weapons and how Hitler was gassed with mustard gas in World War I. He lost his eyesight, and because of that, he never used any chemical weapons in World War II. And I thought at the time, well, how does that tie up with this so-called gassing then?
Well, yeah, and exactly. Well, the thing is, as well, the morals of Hitler are there to be seen. He was gassed in World War I, refused to use the chemical weapons in World War II, but also, if you notice, even when his country was under complete annihilation, he refused to send women to the front because he said many times that he didn't want a woman to go through what he went through in World War I. He would hate his mother to even watch what went on, never mind suffer what went on. And throughout all of that war, there was no women out there on the front, unlike the Bolsheviks, who had a different outlook on it all. So, you know, even though, you know, they were outnumbered totally anyway, he still refused to do it, to me, shows the moral standing of this man.
Well, he didn't just prevent women going to the front and seeing people die. He prevented people seeing soldiers die at the cinema. He wouldn't allow any soldiers to be seen to be shot in any of the films at the cinema. That was forbidden. didn't want the people seeing that. They wanted the films to be uplifting and informative, and they didn't want them to see people dying on film. But this Sean Spicer speaking to all the journalists at the White House, saying that Hitler didn't use chemical weapons during the war. I mean, that's a fact. He didn't use chemical weapons during the war. The allegation is that he used gas against the Jews in the Holocaust. Now, surely what they don't want people realizing is that Hitler didn't use chemicals during the war. Because if he didn't use chemicals in the war, why would he be using them on the Jews? Was he saving all his chemicals up so he could use them on these Jews in the camps? Why wouldn't he have used them in the war? If he would have used them against his enemies in the camps, then why did he not use them against his enemies on the battlefield, where he really needed to win the battle? He already had the Jews at his mercy. He had them in the work camps. So why didn't he use these chemicals on the British Army and on the American Army? Now, surely people in America are going to be asking themselves this question, Dennis, after hearing that.
Well, that's a question which would probably get you a prison sentence in Germany. You're just asking a question, you know, which is giving thought for people to consider, you know, real facts about the Holocaust, that if it did ever exist. So you're saying, well, why didn't he use this same gas on his enemies? Will stir people to think more than they are allowed to in Germany.
So that would be Holocaust denial.
Well, just asking that way, certainly something, you know, you're asking people to think deeper.
Well, it would be, wouldn't it? I think the wording is anything that's different from the accepted body of opinion, and the body of opinion is what people read in the newspapers, which we know is all fake news anyway.
Well, it's all owned by them, isn't it? The point being is that this is the only subject in all of history, and believe me, there's been a lot of controversial subjects in all of history, and this is the only one that, you know, you can look at a prison sentence for even questioning it. Not saying it didn't happen, but questioning it didn't happen.
What they might do now is try and come up with some evidence of him actually using some gas on some of his enemies. They might try and fake some of that, same as they faked all the rest of the history.
Later in the day, though, isn't it?
Yeah, well, this is just it. There's all these holes in the story, isn't there?
Well, every now and again you see these stories, you know, gold bullion found in under the ground of a castle in Austria. You know, these are all things that would have been found out at the time, and it's just keeping these stories and these myths alive. It's just Hollywood, isn't it?
Well, you noticed you missed the Sean Spicer story, but you saw the Red Ken one. Is there anything else you want to talk about while you were away for a couple of weeks?
Yeah, well, I was troubled with Trump, obviously, doing an about turn on the Syrian, because even before anybody could even lay any facts down of what particularly happened, 24 hours, it was bombing the Syrian airport or air ground where the plane supposedly took off. Now, how they know this in such a short time is beyond me. And the fact that, you know, he's doing things that Israel like him to do worries me, because he is a big fan of Israel, obviously. Now he's detonated the bomb off in Afghanistan. There's got to be some slight concerns, if not more, you know.
Yeah, it's troubling. I find it very troubling to see his actions at the moment. It's I think it's a great shame that Assad bombed the chemical weapons depot, because they admitted that they targeted a chemical weapons depot, and they knew that that was surrounded by civilians. Obviously, the rebels there, as soon as it was bombed, they were out with their cameras. They probably added to it. Got people to exaggerate the effects of it. But Assad did admit to hitting that with his Air Force. And I do find myself wondering what the world would look like today if he hadn't done that. Just that one incident. Because a week later, we had Tillerson going to meet Lavrov. If that hadn't have happened, who knows where we would be today? We could have had peace between America and Russia. But the other way of looking at it, I've been thinking, is, was this not about a pretext to go into Syria? Was this all about creating a pretext to get Putin to be annoyed at Assad? To get Putin to think, if it hadn't have been for you bombing that chemical weapons depot, we could have had peace with America by now and had the sanctions lifted. So there's all different ways of looking at it, I think.
Well, it's possible, but I've just noticed since that, there's been an undercurrent, especially from the Americans, to say, kind of paint Putin as being wrong for backing Assad. They're saying to him that it's not in Russia's future, good future anyway, to be backing Assad. It's kind of like making out that Putin made the wrong decision in backing him. And what really amused me was Boris Johnson, who had tried to collect enough people behind him to go into Russia, to say, like, look, if you know, you shouldn't really be standing with Assad. You should join the good guys. And if you don't, we're going to put more sanctions on you. So I don't think Putin's going to fall for any of this. I think
they all told him where to go. The whole of the G7 told him where he could shove his sanctions.
Oh, yeah.
Boris Johnson came home with his tail between his legs. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, for sure. That was amusing. But the fact is, I don't think Putin's going to be swayed on this. Putin knows the situation with Assad and the situation. I mean, how the Americans can turn around and say that all they want is for Syria to be, led by a decent leader, and when they've had Iraq and Libya on their CV, is beyond me. At the end of the day, we know what happens when they take these sovereign leaders down. You know, the countries are ruined, completely ruined. And look, if you look at Libya now, you know, they can't even get an election.
Yeah, geopolitically, it's very worrying to see what he's doing, because we all thought he was going to be hands-off in the Middle East, and so far he's let off a huge bomb in Afghanistan, gone into Syria. Yeah. All I can say, Dennis, I if you look at internally, he's just withdrawn funding for abortions. He's got the prototypes of the wall that are being built in San Diego this month. So if you look internally, he seems to be doing the right thing. Externally, he's doing very badly, I think.
Well, I think the point is, internally, he is America first, but externally, it is Israel.
Israel first, yeah. And Grandpa Lampshade did a particularly good podcast on that last weekend, Breaking News, Trump Attacks Syria, I think it was called. And he points out that America is a client state. Just like in the Middle Ages, we had these client states, these sovereign nations that were that had to obey the bigger nation. America is having to obey Israel, not because Israel is the bigger nation, but because Israel controls the banks, the media, and all the rest of it. So even though America has a new president, they are still answerable to the same people. They're still answerable to these same Jews. So he has some leeway with what he can do, but at the same time, he has to keep towing the line that the Jews want him to. And the other issue is, who else has he got to rely on for his intelligence, his foreign intelligence? The only people he's got are the American intelligence community, the White House intelligence community. And we know how much they want to get rid of Assad. So where else is he going to get his info from? There isn't anywhere, unless he goes to Russia, and we know what will happen then.
Well, what's contradictory to me is when I see him come on TV and say, like, he's talking about these dead babies and these parents who are struggling with the grief, are the same people he bans from coming in, or wants to ban from coming into America. There's a contradiction here somewhere on the lines.
Well, I'm glad he wants to ban them from coming into America. What really gets me was seeing that poor Swiss child, Swedish child in Stockholm that was in pieces after that truck ran over by the Muslim last weekend. Now, why didn't he go straight into Sweden and start bombing the Muslims there? Our problems are with the Muslims in our own countries. The Muslims in the Middle East, let them sort their own problems out among themselves. We've got a far bigger problem with Muslims in Europe and America that need dealing with first, before we go over there to try and sort their problems out.
I totally agree, but I don't think it's going to happen because of, Israel.
I mean, this just shows that we are client states to Israel, and Britain probably even more so than America. If you look at Britain's response to Trump going in there. I mean, it was Boris Johnson that was really pushing for these sanctions and
really
speaking out against Putin. I think maybe Boris Johnson, he's a bit of a fifth column for Turkey. If you think Turkey wants Assad out, don't they? Turkey wants to get rid of Assad. Boris Johnson seems to be the main cheerleader for that. And he is Turkish, isn't he?
Well, the funny thing is that he more or less repeated the same speech as what Haig did about 3 years ago, that Assad will go, never mind, must go, you know what I mean? And we don't see much of Haig these days, but Boris Johnson seems to have reiterated that speech. But he's still there, and he's only there because of Putin, and that's got to be a plus.
Yeah, well, I hope he stays there for a lot longer. I think the best we can hope for from America is if they say, well, the Syrian people must decide. Because we know if the choice is given to the Syrian people, then they will choose Assad. They don't want anyone else. Not 90% or so.
Just as they would have chose Gaddafi.
These people like in Syria who've had the Assads for decades, people in Russia who have had Putin for a couple of decades, they must think that us that keep changing our presidents and changing our political parties must be completely mad. They keep having to deal with somebody entirely new every 5 years or so.
One thing we haven't touched on is the Armada going down to North Korea. So that's another one to ponder.
Yeah, another point there.
He will fire.
He's into his saber rattling. That is worrying. That is worrying. That's another country that he should just leave them alone. He should be doing all he can to come to some peaceful deal with North Korea. North Korea are still at war with America. They never came to a peace.
It never ended. Exactly. Yeah,
that's all they've got to do. Send some diplomat over there to agree to some kind of peace. I've just been looking at these pictures from North Korea today, and they have a really unique culture over there. They are a really unique people, where they've been left alone from the rest of the world. You don't see any Americanization there, no Europeanization. It's uniquely North Korean. And if we didn't have this globalism, every nation in the world would be like that. They would all be completely different to everyone else.
Looking after ourselves instead of anybody else, yeah.
It all looks clean. There's no litter there. It all looks kept. Yeah, there are no advertising. In fact, the only advertising there is for the North Korean people.
We're probably the most healthiest in the world.
Yeah, they do lots of exercise, don't they? I think they have to do a certain amount of exercise every day.
I don't see, overweight North Koreans running around like they do in America.
No, not apart from the main one. But he should be overweight. He's the chief. He should be well-fed and overweight, and he should have the best of everything because he's their chief.
Yeah.
They've got to have one that's given the best education.
The problem is, I do believe he will fire, though. I mean, the reason they could go into Iraq because they didn't have nuclear weapons, they went into Libya because they didn't have, Gaddafi give up his arms, but, I do believe this guy will fire, and if Trump doesn't understand that, that's a problem in itself.
Yeah, well, hopefully he will think, but it is worrying to think that he might not, and that he might start trouble there. Sorry to admit it, but the left do seem to have been correct when they said that he would be a bit gung-ho and inclined to start World War III. All you can do
Hillary, there was no choice.
That's it. We would have had the same with Hillary, and at least with Trump, we've also got some pro-white policies within America, but I think that's the best we've got to look for now is pro-white policies in America and pro-Israel policies in the rest of the world. But that's still a bonus.
In a nutshell.
That's still better than it would have been with Hillary. Anyway, Dennis, we've come to the end of the podcast. Okay. Are you still on Truth Will Out Radio, Truth Will Out on YouTube?
Nothing's changed, yeah.
Okay, well, you can check out Dennis's stuff at YouTube. Can you still find you on Facebook?
No, I'm banned on Facebook.
You can just find Dennis at YouTube. And also, Alt-Right Andy's got Alt-Right Andy's Central Command. You can find all our videos there and also Dennis's stuff. So thank you very much for coming on, Dennis. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back same time, same place next week on Radio Aryan. So we hope you have a great weekend, and we'll see you all again next Friday.
tuned into Radio Aryan.